Okay, so we're talking about serving today and servant leadership, and this is a great example, and it's going to be cool to be able to tie it into my message. But I thought we'd just to begin, just kind of kick it off with a quick video clip. So check this video clip out. So Tim Hawkins is just a funny guy. He's really good at making fun of Christians. I love watching him. It's funny. But like in a lot of ways, that is what we've deduced serving down to is like is the what, right? We talk about what is a servant heart, and many times it's all of the what's. And by all means, it does boil down to the what. The what is like, well, what do you do to serve? But what I really want to talk about today as we look at the life of Nehemiah is I want to look at the what's that he did, but I want to look at the why behind it. Why did he do what he did? And Mike gives taglines a lot, and I've never really done that, but today I think the tagline is really, it's not about the what, but the why. It's not about the what, but the why. So it's not about the what that we do to serve, but why do we serve? Why do we serve? There's some note sheets on your table, not a lot of fill in the blanks. It's really just blank space for you to write notes if you'd like to. So how many of you went to Chick-fil-A Day? Raise hands, Chick-fil-A Day? Yeah. Chick-fil-A Day is awesome because you get people like this guy, and he's like, I love Chick-fil-A Day, but I didn't get any chicken. So it's interesting, though. Chick-fil-A, to me, as you know, Christian organization, Truett Cathy, he founded Chick-fil-A. And so I think the Chick-fil-A's real goal and desire is to serve people. And it was really cool to see this picture the last time we went this past week on a Chick-fil-A Day, because we were at the one in Reston at night. It was super busy. I mean, the line was way out the door. And so they were just pushing, getting people through, giving chicken sandwiches, all this different stuff. And then when we finally came to get our food, the lady that was bringing us the food, she actually said to me, thank you for your patience. And in my mind, I was like, you're thanking me for my patience? I should be thanking you for your patience. I mean, all these people coming through getting totally free food. And for her, I think it was totally about the day, and it was about serving people. And that really spoke to me, because it was like, man, that she would be willing. And I think she meant it. I don't think she was just saying, I know at Chick-fil-A, they kind of bring them up to my pleasure in serving people. But I think for her, truly, she was like, you know, thank you for your patience today. And Chick-fil-A, truly, on Chick-fil-A Day, I don't think they have to lose money. I mean, I know a lot of places do stuff like that because they want to get money, but I feel like Chick-fil-A has to lose money. And I think they embody the idea of a servant's heart. I think Chick-fil-A truly wants to serve people. They want to bring a good product at a decent price and to serve people. So I think they're kind of a real-world example of a servant's heart. But there's one other part of Chick-fil-A that I think really shows they have a servant's heart, and it's Chick-fil-A sauce. Chick-fil-A sauce is the bomb. Like, I just want to drink this stuff. And Wendy's like, no, don't do it. It's so weird. But it's so good. I love. Dude. Yes. Chick-fil-A sauce on everything. How can it have that many ingredients? It's just a sauce. It's slowly killing us, but who cares? So I think Nehemiah, all joking aside, I think Nehemiah gives us a really good insight into, we've been talking about godly leadership. What is godly leadership? But I think Nehemiah gives us a great insight into a godly leader with a servant's heart. So we're going to talk today about the what that Nehemiah did, how did he serve, how did he have a servant's heart, but the why behind it, the why behind it. The first thing is that a servant's heart is not about the what, but the why. That's on the top of your note sheet. But the first thing is this: a servant leader is not about himself. A servant leader is not about himself. And today we're going to be in Nehemiah chapter 5 the whole time. So if you want to go ahead and open up there to Nehemiah chapter 5 so you can follow along with me, because I'm not just making all this up. I'm going through God's word and bringing it to you. I think it's important that we open it up together. So Nehemiah chapter 5. And we're going to talk about first, a servant leader is not about himself. I'm going to go skip around a little bit within the chapter, but where we're first going to start is in verses 14 through 19. And it's in my Bible, it's titled Nehemiah's Example. I'm going to read it all to you so you can follow along with me. Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 14 through 19. Moreover, from the day that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, for 12 years neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance. But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine, besides 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants domineered their people. But I did not do so because of the fear of God. I also applied myself to the work of this wall. We did not buy any land, and all my servants were gathered there for work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 Jews and officials, besides those who came to us from the nations that were around us. Now that which was prepared for each day was an ox, 6 choice sheep with Chick-fil-A sauce. Just kidding. Also, birds were prepared for me, and 1 in 10 days, all sorts of wine were furnished in abundance. Yet for all this, I did not demand the governor's food allowance because the servitude was heavy on this people. Remember me, O my God, for the good according to all that I have done for the people. So this is like a sweet example where, I think it's Ezra lays out what Nehemiah did for the people, how he served them. And the first thing is, as the governor of Jerusalem, he didn't do what the other kings in the past had done. All the other governors had always taken the food that was allotted to the governor and had taken even more than that for themselves. And for 12 years, he never took any of that. Now, it would have been lawfully okay for him to take the governor's allowance and probably some of the more of the taxes. It was lawfully okay. So it's not like he was doing wrong. But because of his servant's heart, he said, I am not going to take the food because I see the burden that it puts on the people. He realized it was an unnecessary burden. He didn't need this. So he was very willing to sacrifice and go, I don't need this. I can serve the people. But it would have been rightfully okay for him to do it. It wouldn't have been wrong. Because of his mindset and how he was outward and looking to others, he didn't take the food that was allotted to him nor any of the money. Now, the second thing we see that he did is in verse 16, it says, I also applied myself to the work on this wall. We did not buy any land, and all my servants were gathered for the work. Now, I think this is an interesting thing that we'd find out about Nehemiah. Because if he's the governor, he's kind of got the insider track. He's got the insider tip, right? So he could know, okay, where's the best land to buy? How can I get the best deals? He has all the relationships. He has the network going. He could probably buy the best land and get the best land and have the money to lend and all these different things. But we find that he made a decision not to do this. When he had it easy, he could have done it, but he made a very distinct decision to go, I'm not going to do this because I want to serve the people that I'm leading. I think one reason why we as Americans have become very distrustful of those in the government and politics is because many times we see and we feel that they don't serve us. Even though they're supposed to be serving us, they really serve themselves because they have that insider track. And Nehemiah, in his servant heart, made a distinct decision to go, now I will serve the people. And then the third thing we find in how he wasn't about himself, but he was about others, says he had regularly entertained 150 guests at his dinner table. And what we can know from that is, that wasn't coming from the governor's allowance of food. That was coming from his own budget, from his money, from his food, that he would regularly serve 150 guests. Now, I think Nehemiah was wise in what he did. I think he was a wise leader. I don't think he took himself broken doing this. But I don't think he was about gaining his own personal wealth, his own personal status, because he was outward focused. He was focused on the people. He knew the goal that he had to do. He knew the goal was to rebuild the wall. He knew that he had to lead. But at the same time, he knew that he was about people and he wasn't about himself. And it's easy to read this verses and go, well, yeah, that's Nehemiah. He's in the Bible. That's why he's there. But I think if we backtrack a little bit and we see where Nehemiah came from and where he is, I think we really see the heart of a leader, because this is the guy that was the cupbearer to the king of Persia, which at that time, Persia was the greatest empire. They had basically conquered everyone within their territory. He was the cupbearer. He was the right-hand man to the king. And so he is motivated by God to go to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall. And he asked the king for permission, not only to go rebuild the wall, but he also asked for permission to bring free supplies, and the king grants it. And then he comes into Jerusalem, studies the wall, and tells people what he's going to do, and they all follow him. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, we think about people that become famous, and then when they become famous, they totally, you know, forget where they came from. I mean, it's interesting. Nehemiah already was famous, rises to even more fame, goes to Jerusalem, rebuilding the wall, becomes the governor, the leader of the people. All these things are happening, and I don't think he lost sight of what it was all about, that it was about people. One thing I've really liked about studying the book of Nehemiah was I really think Nehemiah knew rebuilding the wall wasn't just about rebuilding a physical wall. He knew that it was about rebuilding the hearts of the people to trust God, to walk with him. Nehemiah didn't forget that. He knew it was about people. I mean, just to think in a real world example, I mean, in a lot of ways, this would be like the governor of Virginia inviting us people every night, 150 people, to come to his table to eat dinner with him off of his own dime, his own money. I mean, that'd be fairly unheard of. I think the governor of Virginia may do that as a token of, hey, I can look good, this would be good for the press. But Nehemiah was doing this on a regular basis because he was about himself. And what's cool about it is because Nehemiah didn't take the food allowance, because he didn't take the money or buy land or lend money, he enabled the people to be able to continue building the wall. It was a hard task. It was an extremely hard task to rebuild the wall, especially when they had the opposition from their enemies all around them and everything going on. And yet, Nehemiah saw the hearts of the people and said, I want to see them succeed. I want to see what they do, them be able to do it. And so in doing that, he realized, I can't be about myself. I have to be about them. And so I think the people felt cared for. They felt like, wow, like our leader is with us. He's doing this with us. It's interesting, too. It says that he was out there applying himself to the wall. He wasn't sitting up in a high position leading and saying, okay, you guys do what you do. I'm kind of leading up here. He was right in there with him in the thick of it, serving and leading with his servant's heart. This is an interesting example, I think, kind of this in Matthew 12. It's always been an interesting couple verses to me, and it's Jesus, and he's walking with his disciples. And he says, at that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples became hungry and began to pick the heads of grain to eat. So realize it's the Sabbath. You're not supposed to do work on the Sabbath, and especially in the Old Testament law. And it says, but when the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, look, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. But he said to them, have you not read what David did when he became hungry? He and his companions, how he entered the house of God and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priest alone? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath day the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and are innocent? But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, I desire compassion and not a sacrifice, you would have not condemned the innocent. I think Jesus like lays out a cool example for us to follow in realizing that I think Jesus could have been about, you are totally right. The Old Testament law says you should not eat on the Sabbath. You should do none of this. But Jesus saw his disciples, those that he was with, that they were hungry and he had compassion on them. And it's cool to think that the disciples, these 12 guys, were the ones that would bring God's word to the rest of the earth. And in the same way, I think Nehemiah sees the example of Jesus not realizing it. But the example of Jesus is that Jesus would say, I have compassion on this group of people, these 12 disciples that I am with. I think a modern day example would be Abraham Lincoln. He's an interesting looking guy. He's got a long face. I think, reading a quote here, many scholars look to his preservation of the Union during this conflict and the freeing of Southern slaves. So, during the time of the Civil War, why do these particular actions qualify as servant leadership? The simplest reason is that it would have been much easier for Lincoln to let the Union dissolve and or to simply let slavery remain intact rather than taking the easy road. However, Lincoln chose the harder road because it would be more beneficial to the people he was serving in the long run. even if they did not realize it at the time. I think in the same way, that's what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah said, I realize I am serving the people I am with, and I'm looking even further ahead. So when I decide to bring them to eat with me, it's because I care about them. I want to see them succeed in the long run and follow God and see God through me. I think that's what, in a lot of ways, Abraham Lincoln was being, that servant leader and looking further ahead. It would have been so easy for Nehemiah to go, sure, I want the governor's food. I want the governor's allowance. I mean, that would have been the easy road to go. It would have been the easy road to go to say, I'm the governor. I have a lot of things to do. I need to lead in this way. But he said, I'm going to be with the people. I'm going to be with the people. That was his servant heart. So for you, for us, I think us sacrificing some of our desires, our wants, for the benefit of others. And I know that's easier said than done, but I think it goes back to the what. I mean, it goes back to the why and not the what. Because see, we could look at things like, what are the what? Well, I could sacrifice some of my money. I could sacrifice my time. I could sacrifice the certain kind of clothes I like to wear something cheaper. You know, I could sacrifice my attitude. And so we can look at all of the what, but really it goes back to the why. Do we serve because we want to look good for others? Do we serve because we want to see a purpose fulfilled? And so we know, you know, Nehemiah could have been like, I know if I show that I care for the people, then they'll want to work harder. But I think it goes back to the why. It goes back to the why. And the why is the key part in this message today on the why is this. A servant leader is about God's will. A servant leader is about God's will. This is the core of the why and not just the what. Nehemiah was doing what he was doing because he was motivated by God and not by man. I don't know if you saw it when we read the verses, but there's some really interesting things that are just short here, but they're really core to the heart of a servant leader, that it's not the what, but it's the why. The first one is in the end of verse 15. It says, I'll read the whole thing. It says, but the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine besides 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants dominated the people. Then it says, but I did not do so because of the fear of God. Nehemiah, he could have stopped there. He could have just said, I didn't take from the people. I didn't dominate over the people because I saw that it was a heavy burden on them. But Nehemiah says, I did it because of the fear of God. He doesn't say, I did it because I wanted the people to work harder. I wanted the people to be happy. I wanted to be more comfortable. I wanted them to like me. We all struggle with that. We want to serve people because ultimately they'll like us. Nehemiah says, I did it because of the fear of God. Nehemiah fear God. It's not that he's scared of God. He's not scared enough, like, God's going to, you know, smite me or kill me here. But it's like, I fear God because he is God. He is creator. I have seen him work. I fear him enough that I will trust him and follow him. And Nehemiah knew that God's heart was about people. In the end, Nehemiah, God was about people. And Nehemiah said, Lord, I fear you. I trust you. Therefore, I will serve people. I'll say it again. Being a godly leader is not about the what, but the why. It's a heart that fears God and wants to follow him. And the outcome of fearing God is a servant's heart. It's not that you have a servant's heart and then you fear God. Because see, we can be Christians that serve people. We can do it. We can say, God called me to do it. I'm just going to do it. We can do it begrudgingly. We do it many times because we've committed to something, because we said we'd do it, because we know we should be good people. But ultimately, it comes down to the why. Why do we serve? We serve because we fear God and we trust him enough. And that is what he has called us to do. So it starts with a heart that fears God. And then it goes to a servant's heart. See, the servant's heart is the outcome. The what is the outcome. It has to start with the why. It has to start with the why. Verse 19, at the end of this section we've been reading, is finally it says, remember me, O my God, for good, according to all that I have done for my people. Now, when I first read this verse, I'm like, wow, that's really prideful. He's like, remember me, God, for all the good that I have done. As I was studying a little bit more, reading some other commentaries on it, I think what what Nehemiah is really saying here is exactly what he was saying at the beginning, that he is doing this for God, not for people. It's interesting. You know, in some ways, you almost would have think he would have loved to have said to the people, people of Jerusalem, those that I have had at my table and served dinner, those that I have worked beside, remember me for the good that I have done. Remember me, remember me. And it's interesting, Nehemiah says, no, God. God, you remember me. Because I know you're the one that really gives me all that I'm looking for, all the worth that I'm looking for. See, guys, if we want to be Christians that serve, that follow God and serve people because we want them to see the love of God, because we want to love each other in this room, if we are ultimately doing it for each other, that we have each other's praise, that we even have the world's praise, and that's our motivation, we will falter, we will fall. It will become too hard to do it on our own. But when we are motivated by God through his word, through his love for us, what he's done for us, that we realize living for him is ultimate purpose, that is when I think we are ultimately fearing God and walking with him. So it is about the why, not the what. In 1 Corinthians 11:11, Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. That's a weighty thing to say. I mean, I don't know if I want to say that to you guys, and I try my hardest to live that, imitate me as I imitate Christ. But I think Paul could say that because he truly was living for God. He was living for God because of what Jesus had done in his life and transformed him. He says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And in the same way as we serve because we fear God, we're showing others around us, follow me because I'm following Christ. Don't follow me because I want the love or the praise of others. Follow me because I am following Christ. So the question to you is, what is your motivation? For those that were up here, even serving and washing the feet, what is your motivation for serving? Why did you do that? It's interesting. I think washing people's feet is a great example, but sometimes I think the best is when we do it and no one knows, because then our true motivation, I think, is shown if we're really doing it because of the fear of God and to ultimately serve God. Ultimately, we serve because we want God to be glorified. So I think this ultimately, the motivation, it comes down to a battle of our mind. A servant heart doesn't start with the outward flow. It starts with the mind. What is your motivation of why you are doing? And this is something that you will continually, as a follower of Christ, have to bring to God often. I have to bring this to God so many times. Say, Lord, why am I doing this? Why am I serving God? Am I doing it for me, or am I ultimately doing it for you? And so I want you to know, as you seek to follow Christ and he begins to mold you to have a servant's heart, It's gonna come down to a battle of the mind. Why are you doing it? Your flesh is gonna wanna do it for the praise of man, for the praise of others, for yourself to feel good. And you're continually have to bring it to God and go, God, shape my heart. Give me your motivations. Not for me, but for you, Lord. So what are you motivated by? Man's opinion? Because your man's opinion and your opinion of yourself and man's opinion of you will always change. It will ever be changing. And I hate that because it's so hard. Because the way man thinks about me, the way I think about myself is ever-changing, but God's will is everlasting. God's will is everlasting. Man's opinion of you and your opinion of yourself will change, but God's will is everlasting. I think a modern-day example of this is Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King was never worried about the accolades of man. He wasn't looking to be praised by man. He wasn't looking to be remembered. He is remembered, but he was never looking to be remembered. He was fighting for the civil rights of African Americans, but ultimately Martin Luther King was motivated by God. Martin Luther was ultimately motivated by God, and I think that's why he was never ending and never ceasing in what he did. He didn't become tired out because ultimately he was motivated by God's will and serving people and ultimately serving this nation. So speaking of, just talking about this idea of a servant heart, I love looking how Jesus did this in Luke chapter 22. It says, let me get there. Luke chapter 22, verse 42. Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. This is the night before he's going to be arrested. He's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and here's what he says in verse 42. Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. I think Jesus lays out the ultimate example for us of what is a servant heart's about. Because there are going to be many times when having a servant's heart is not fun. But it's what God has called you to. And Jesus, I think in both his humanity and his deity, right here in this verse, says, God, in my humanity as a human, I want you to take this from me. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to the cross. I don't want to die. I don't want to have the sins of the world put on me. But yet, in his deity and yet in his humanity at the same time, he says, not my will, but yours. And that's where we come and we lay ourselves before God and we go, Lord, not my will, but yours. Give me your motivations, God. Give me yours. I want to be a servant. But on my own, in my own flesh, I can't do it. Lord, will you come? Will you give me your motivations? And I believe God gave Jesus the strength to carry on, to go to the cross and be the ultimate servant, to die for us on the cross, the ultimate act of servants, of service. Discouragement and fear must have been a very real reality for Jesus. You know, he could have called the angels down, but ultimately he knew God's will was best. He was motivated by God's will. So a godly leader with a servant heart is not about himself. He is about God's will. That's his motivation because he wants to serve God's will. He wants to serve God, not man, not man's opinion. And lastly, a servant leader is about people. Kind of goes without saying, I think, but yet as I was studying, I realized, you know, a lot of times we do. We think of service servant as like doing chairs and different things that are very much a part of that. And people that have servants' hearts want to serve in that way. But ultimately, what's it about? It's about people. Those of you that set these chairs up, you were doing it to serve people so that we can all sit here right now and do these things. Jen Dodson that serves us so faithfully each Sunday, she does it because she wants you guys to be able to worship in the right way, to have the different things you need to know God. So ultimately we serve because it's about people. The goal that united everyone was rebuilding the wall. See, that was the goal that they were doing in Jerusalem, was to rebuild the wall, and that's what united them together. And I think Nehemiah, it was neat because he stayed focused on the wall. He stayed focused on rebuilding the wall, and he knew that that was the goal. But I think he knew he cared about people, and it was about people as he served them. So he recognizes what people are going through in rebuilding the wall. And in the beginning of the chapter, I want to flip back to there. It says, basically, there was an outcry of the people. So Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 1. There was an outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, we are sons and our daughters are many. Therefore, let us get grain that we may eat and live. So they're like saying like, Nehemiah, man, we got like no food left, dude. We are dying right now. And trying to rebuild this wall. There were others who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses that we might get grain because of the famine. So they're saying, we have basically given everything we have away to now help to give our money and our time to rebuild this wall. And there were those who said, we've borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. Now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, our children like their children. Yet behold, we are forcing our sons and daughters to be slaves. Some of our daughters are forced into bondage already, and we are helpless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others. So they were even literally giving their own sons and daughters away to be slaves because they had no money. They had given everything away to rebuild the wall. And here's Nehemiah's reaction. So basically what we think is Nehemiah didn't know all this was happening at the time. This is the first time he's heard about it. And he says, then in verse 6, then I was very angry. And when I had heard this outcry and these words, I consulted with myself. So he's thinking in his mind, what do I do? And then he contended with the nobles and the rulers, those that were ruling with him. And he said to them, you are exacting usury, each from his own brother. He's saying, you are taking interest from your own brothers. And he goes on and he says, we are putting our own people in slavery. Didn't we just come out of this from being in bondage from the Persians and the Babylonians? Why are we doing this again? Nehemiah gets angry over this. But I think what he could have done, he could have said, our goal is rebuilding the wall. I don't really care that much about what happens over here because we want to get the wall rebuilt. But Nehemiah stops and he says, no, it's the ultimate goal, yes, is rebuilding the wall. But really what it's about is people. And that's what God cares about is people. But you know what makes life really hard? People, right? That's what makes life really hard. But that's what God is about. He's about people. And I think that's ultimately when it boils down to it. Why? God desires for followers of Christ to be servant-hearted is because it's about people. It's not about always the end game. If you think about our youth ministry, we could have a great youth ministry if we had camps, retreats, dodgeball tournaments, small groups, bring it, first fruits, you know, everything else that are great. But ultimately, they're just programs if they're not about people. And in our lives, if we're just going about it, and I am so guilty of this, I just get on a focused task and forget that really is about people. But we're motivated by God's will because God is about people. He says, when he gives us the Great Commission, he says, go therefore and make disciples of people. Not programs are going to make disciples, but you guys are going to make disciples. As we are servant leaders and love people and walk with them and are willing to get in the nitty gritty of their lives. But we do it because we're motivated by God's will. And I think Jesus leaves us with the ultimate example of really what it's like to be a servant leader. When he washes the feet of his disciples, but step back a little bit. If Jesus really, I think, was doing like the best business plan of how to get his business going, he would not have picked the 12 disciples that he did. He picked regularly ordinary guys, but he walked with them in life. He loved them. He cared for them. He taught them. He guided them. He discipled them. And then at the end, when he leaves, he's like, I will wash your feet because while I've been your leader, really, I'm here to serve you. And he leaves us with that as the ultimate example. I'll leave you guys with this. The world needs godly leaders who are servant-hearted to carry the gospel forth. And this means ultimate dependence on God. To be a servant-hearted, we have to have ultimate dependence on God. Let me pray. Lord, we thank you for your word that, God, even in the life of Nehemiah, he shows us that it's so much about the why and not the what. But God, when we have the why right, that we are loved by you, cared for by you, God, that you want us to be servant-hearted. We ultimately fear you and serve you. And the outflow of that is that we can be servant-hearted leaders in our homes, in our schools, in our jobs, in our friend groups. Lord, I pray right now over these students, these leaders, and everybody else here, God, that you will be our motivation, God. I pray that we will all fall before you, God, and ask for your motivation and your will. Lord, that we can love each other within this room and ultimately to carry forth the gospel. Amen. All right, you got a couple questions to talk about. They're on the bottom of your sheet too.